And welcome everybody here on YouTube. This is Off the Hook Overtime. Emmanuel here. Kyle, did you make it as well?
Yes, I'm here.
We're okay? Those little buttons that you're pushing? Okay.
Yeah, I made the van appear.
And, great, on in Signal Land we have Rob and Gila. Are we okay there, guys?
You have us. I'm waiting for the delay on YouTube to catch up with us, and there it goes.
Wow.
I hear us on YouTube.
Okay. How amazing is that? And the phone calls are already coming in. We're not taking phone calls yet, though, folks, so wait for us to give the number out. I know people are eager and exuberant, and how bad is it on Mastodon now that we weren't trashing Mastodon. We were simply offering constructive criticism, and I think, people would do well to listen, just as we always listen.
Yeah, we haven't gotten any direct responses on the Mastodon for this program as yet, but...
Okay.
We do invite such things.
There's more to say. I was going on in the break about it. It's really the bigger issue for people that curate. They spend a lot of time and effort with all that content. That's what those advertisers benefit from, is all the work people do. And I was just talking to E about just how fragmented it is each time you choose to be or not to be at one of these places, to be Shakespearean. There's plenty of examples of places that just the format didn't work for us, or we weren't there. TikTok's one of them. Like us doing 15-second or whatever dance videos, or Vine, or whatever popular app everybody is.
Why the hell would I do a dance video?
I mean, maybe we would be great. We don't know. We wouldn't be great at that.
Maybe we don't want to know.
It isn't necessarily in our wheelhouse as far as getting information out. You can't share a screenshot of something interesting, or you can't write necessarily in the same way. So we pick and choose these things, and then some of them stay around and they become incredibly popular, or some of them just go away. We've experienced all that. That's all the things you have to kind of navigate if you're on these things and trying to continue to have a presence online.
Use whatever damn platform you feel like using, okay? We are not going to judge you. Nobody should judge you for using a platform. It's what you say. It's what you do. It's who you are, all right? You don't judge a book by its cover. You don't judge somebody by their platform.
I guess I'm just pointing out how complicated it is.
It's ridiculous. I mean, you can't keep track of them all. There's a new one every week, you know? There's Threads, there's Instagram, there's Facebook, all Meta.
But every time you experience that churn, mm-hmm. you lose some of what you build.
That's true.
So you can pack up and go. But I don't know. Rob, did you experience it like every last one of your subscribers or followers come with you as soon as you jump ship? I mean, I don't know if that's exactly... Someone can say it. Every time you lose something in the process, when you have to rebuild anew, like the Phoenix, what, do you have any... insight into that? What was that like?
That's a very good question, and it was a very big deal for me because I did have a good sized following and network over there. And when I moved, first of all, I said, I'm not using this anymore. Here's where I am. Made sure to have the information up there. This is where I am on Mastodon. Here's the joinmastodon.org site, which is the newbie friendly guide to getting started on Mastodon.
Onboarding
and.
Yeah.
Yeah, the onboarding, and a lot of folks did. I know at least a couple of people that are in my circles on Mastodon now came from Twitter because they followed me, and that's a nice feeling because I've also watched those people get involved in the community and have things on Mastodon to do besides me, but there are people who did not come with. There are people that I lost, but I think the important thing, especially for people in the social media generation of the present, need to keep in mind is that I have always directed any social media outlet I've had back to my own site, my own website, where I can always be found, which is my forever home on the net as long as I keep paying for the domain every year. And so when people... when and if people notice that I'm no longer on Twitter or I'm no longer on TikTok, which I also deleted after trying it out, or other things, they can always find me. I'm Googleable, and my website is known, and that links to whatever I'm using now.
What did you just say? Googleable? What?
it's a genericized term, and you can Google people on DuckDuckGo. But okay, yeah. No, I do see what you say there, and maybe that's another term I should work on excising from my vocabulary. What do you think?
I mean, I don't know. It's like drinking a Pepsi Coke in Atlanta, I suppose.
Well, and I felt this with when TikTok itself was being sort of deemed to be shut down. We would hear stories. I mean, there were creators or whatever they identify or label themselves. They would talk about these like astronomical numbers of subscribers. They'd be like, I have a million subscribers, or just huge numbers that in the sort of fringes of hacker internet culture, we wouldn't even dream of that. And you'd feel for them because of the amount of effort you know it takes to keep in touch or keep the views up and all of that. Anyway, it just occurred to me, it's an individual choice because people have different amounts of presence online. Sometimes this is their only presence for anonymity or for other reasons. They don't want to host the site themselves, or they don't want to pay for it necessarily forever, and they like the free service. Anyway, those are my insights.
That also speaks to a fundamental difference between centralized and non-centralized social media, because social media that is algorithm-driven, like Twitter or like TikTok, there is vested interest in people just getting followers, just getting the numbers up. And there are also, you know, this idea that people are just following whoever for whatever reason. Maybe they didn't know you before. Maybe they don't know you from anything. They just randomly follow you. And there is a great population of bots to enable people to just get the numbers up. On other social media, decentralized things, there's no reason to do that. There is no algorithm to feed. There's no advertising to feed in that sense. So I think every single follower pretty much that I've got on Mastodon is a person, and that person's interest in what I'm doing is worth maybe a zillion bots. And so like the metrics don't directly compare to one another for that reason. So I don't have the numbers I did on Twitter, but how many of those numbers I had on Twitter were people that would actually be interested in what I'm doing?
Yeah, you know, it's a good point too, because it is mostly people that you have following you on a platform like Mastodon. But sometimes you want to hear from, say, a newspaper or, you know, a department or, you know, something in a different part of the world. And you need to be able to open yourselves up to that as well as the individual. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like apples and oranges in some ways. In some ways, it's very much the same as far as communicating basic ideas and thoughts and distractions and things like that. But there are differences between these platforms. Now, you say that a lot of your followers made it over. I would say in our case, in most of the cases I've looked at, it's about a tenth, sometimes far less. But again, how many of your original followers were real followers in the first place? It's hard to really say. But
well, and you're also talking about platforms that themselves have changed, specifically Twitter, over time. Like Twitter of yesteryear,
used to be
findable by actual people that are exploring.
There used to be so much more engagement there.
Now you may be as findable, but you're findable mainly by cadres of bots or hate groups or whatever is on there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you can just hop in a thread or quote something that a public, you know, representative or someone that is engaging in, you know, civic discourse, you can get in there and be a part of that conversation. So you're sort of like hopping around this sort of unknown past skeletal version of a platform, just so you can be in the same kind of conversation or public square that much of the government and private business is still there. Like, they're still in it. So as a business or as a publication, if many other newspapers are there, their readers would also you would be just as findable to their audience, I think, in some regards, however much the algorithmic side of it has changed or been tweaked.
Go ahead, Kayla.
I think there's also, I don't know, I've said this before, but one of the things I enjoy a lot about Mastodon is that it's physically impossible to become the internet's main character on Mastodon in the way that it was on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's that way on Blue Sky. I have joined Blue Sky. I'm mostly a lurker there. And I don't think that you know, you can become the internet's main character there in the same way. Is that something that I kind of miss about Twitter? Yes. But I don't think that those days are coming back.
Yeah, definitely not.
Sorry. I also miss, like, one thing that I've definitely felt the absence of. I got really used to when I had a problem with, like, a store or a public agency or something that was going on, and I could find their official Twitter and, you know, either publicly shame them or DM them and get an answer. I got a set of stairs fixed in a subway station in our neighborhood because I tweeted at the MTA about it when it was broken. And, you know, things like that,
Rob,
can be very useful.
You know,
and
I'm sorry we didn't bring that up during the show, but yes, that still exists to this day. You can still do that. That's another reason why it's a good idea to have that level of contact so that you can reach out to some organization or business, because odds are they're there. I haven't been able to do that once on either Blue Sky or Mastodon. I want to, but it's just so easy on Twitter, and that's got nothing to do with who's running the platform or Elon Musk or any of that. You can just find, like, you know, your cable company, reach them, and within minutes be talking to somebody, or you can call up and be on hold for an hour.
I think,
you know, it's
that would be a next cadre, or the next a most important cadre of social media accounts to traverse from one platform to the other, is getting customer service for private and public institutions onto some of the decentralized platforms.
Yeah.
It would be wonderful if they were also embracing these things instead of just the main commercial apps that are going away or that people are moving away from, because that function is beloved. I mean, it's especially in emergencies, if you're talking about like airline or any other kind of company that might have an incident or have some situation where they have a lot of concern, a lot of the public needing to get help quickly, integrating those tools, allowing people to send information directly to them without having massive phone banks or a huge staff to attend all of that, I think it amplifies their ability to be responsive to consumers or to the public. So that would be great to see cadres of those types of functionalities move to these platforms as well, because I don't think they're being attacked for being on Twitter or something, and their choice to
serve
the public
that way. They're being attacked for other reasons.
Right, I'm sure they are, but it's like, how can we onboard or get more people from various segments of the parts of these platforms that we enjoy to expand? And that's how we looked at it, is that we're expanding. We're on more of these places that people are interacting, for better or worse, and until they really truly disintegrate, I guess we'll keep at least some kind of presence to monitor it and figure out how bad it's getting, especially ones that went from something we had a relative joy and a good experience with that has slowly degraded over time. We want to bear witness to that for its own historical posterity. But I think these are the kinds of things, the things we're talking about missing, those are good things to encourage well-resourced places that have entire departments doing this stuff,
so
customer service specifically, to embrace it.
Let's make it a project. For all of us that want to see Mastodon succeed, let's pick a company, Spectrum, okay? the cable people everybody hate. let's get them onto Mastodon or Blue Sky. You know, maybe it's a competition who can get them first. I don't know. So that we, when we have problems, can reach out to them via that platform. Or, okay, if not Spectrum, how about American Airlines? Yeah, everyone wants to see them on social media so that you can complain about the various things they get wrong. You know, when you do that, that's when more and more people will say, hey, this is an effective tool for me to use.
Couldn't they make their entire like customer service
and
Fediverse, like its own?
I don't know.
Network?
Maybe they can.
Then all of them want to be
a
part of?
I'm not that technically adept to be able to tell.
Yeah, one instance
but,
would just be customer service.
Sure, why not? You'll go set that up for them. But
yeah, I'll be right back.
But, you know, when we get to that stage, then people will say, you know, I don't need Twitter anymore because I can do that over here. So let's make that happen. I really want to see that happen. Go ahead.
Public officials. Sorry, Gila.
No, it's cool. I have two questions. The first question is, how long did it take for everybody to get on Twitter? How long did it take for Twitter to become Twitter?
Mm-hmm.
As it was.
You mean like critical mass of individuals there?
Yeah.
But also it being worth it for businesses to get their own Twitter and public agencies and so forth. Yeah, that didn't happen on old Twitter.
When did it take flight, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, I do know when it crashed and burned. That was a few years. There were people that were condemning it well before then, but it really had a death spiral about 3 years ago. I'm not sure what happened then, but something happened, and that's when it just changed the way it is. But that also says that, you know, if the winds change, maybe it could evolve into something else more positive. It's possible. You know, it doesn't always have to end in fire.
But these have been cyclical things. Like, it's predictable.
Right.
I'm sure there has been research, probably academic papers, on these cycles of Web 2.0, or now I guess 3.0, these companies emerging, onboarding subscribers, and then there being a deterioration of service. And that is where I came in with the comment about switching costs, because that was the main thing that Facebook relied on keeping people captive, is that everybody that they would miss if they left, and combating that with having alternatives and places that people are already establishing dual presences, or just sharing in general, like on one, this is where I am over here, which Rob pointed out was a part of his process for migrating away, and then ultimately going back to your main page or wherever your landing site is on the web.
How many people have you lost track of because you don't know what platform they're on? You know they're there somewhere, they're around, you even see them sometimes, but you don't know how to reach them because they're on a different platform that you don't even know the name of.
I wanted to make a phone call this week, and I had a real, like, existential debate with my, like, just... I was in crisis over what type of phone call I should make, because there's so many different types of phone calls I could make, and it was actually paralyzing.
Wait,
like,
hang on. There's FaceTime. There's a Skype call.
Uh-huh.
A Signal call.
Signal.
There's a telephone call. You can still do that, by the way.
And then landline. And then WhatsApp.
No, a rotary call. A rotary call is different than a touch tone call.
That's okay? True.
Yeah.
There's dial tone.
So and
DTMF.
Exactly. And is your friend have an odd number or an even number? That also makes that matters.
Yeah. But I was really
tell the kids this. They'll believe it. They will.
I was like, wow, this person just wants to talk to me. I talk to them on four other platforms. How exactly do I call them? Oh, wait. And then there's like, should it be a video call or just an audio call?
Well,
what is the etiquette anymore?
This is why we have 2,600 meetings for people who can't figure out how to call each other anymore. At least you can gather together once a month in a place that you know.
No, you're not understanding. I know how to use a phone. I know how to talk on a phone. It's
right.
Not that. It's
but you have to connect to
there's
something.
There's so many ways to call. How do people want to hear? What type of call do you prefer? What is even the enrollment? How do you clarify this in setting in call setup?
Hang on, I'm getting
with
a call.
Other humans.
I'm actually getting a call now.
Gila, you have your hand.
I do, because while you're getting a call, I want to take this moment to say hello to the almost 70 people who are with us on YouTube right now. We're having a lively discussion in the chat, especially if we're seeing some people who are not often with us. So this is very exciting. And did want to share one thing. How do we pronounce this? Delchi?
Delchi. Delchi.
Delchi.
How do you pronounce Delchi is how I say it. That's our friend out in, where is he, in Vegas? Is he in Vegas? That's where I saw him, but I'm not sure where he is. I think he might be, he's out there somewhere.
He's out there somewhere
in the West.
But
I didn't mean it that way. No, I mean he's out there somewhere. I think New Mexico or Nevada or one of those states.
But says the internet needs a sign that says you must be this tall to ride this ride.
Oh yeah.
And I think that's a really good thing to keep in mind, and it's.
I don't think it's the height that's the problem. I don't think it's that.
I mean, if you can't actually see the computer, you may have a problem.
I think that's too, I guess, vague for me. Because I could say, like, I'm done with all of it, you know, like, I really detest all of it. I mean, we even kind of went there, we were talking about, and I think Alex pointed out how much he just hates all of it. He thinks it's the downfall of man. It very well may be.
Hey, where's Alex?
We lost Alex. He was unable to stick with us for overtime this week. He's busy at his out in Seattle, where apparently things like that happen.
How did I not realize he wasn't here?
But it's like it's a ride we're forced to be on.
Uh-huh. Are we? And are we really forced to be on the ride?
We're not quite either tall or short enough to.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
But I still think that there's, you know, there are some rides that even if you're technically tall enough to be on them, you have to be emotionally prepared for them. We were talking about this recently. You remember the gondolas at amusement parks?
I've never taken a gondola at an amusement park. I have no desire to fall into water on top of everything else.
It's like a chairlift, but it just goes around the park, and I hate them. And I actually terrified my brother, scarred the child for life, because I'm terribly afraid of heights. I have been my entire life, and we were on one of the gondola rides at the amusement park in our hometown, and I spent the entire time freaking out and screaming and saying, get me down, get me down, get me down, because it was up there too long, too high.
So this isn't a gondola that goes in water. I thought that's what you were talking about.
No, not like a Venice gondola.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is just a Midwestern thing, but it was like...
Like the thing that goes to Roosevelt Island, the
tram,
the hanging cable.
Yeah, they call that a tram, but in Europe a tram is something completely different, and that's called a ski lift in other places.
But like it's like a ski lift, but instead of going up and dropping you off, it does a whole circuit around. It did a whole circuit around the park. That park's been demolished.
Sometimes they have them at fairgrounds.
Yes.
Right, and I have seen them as an adult and been like, no, thank you, I'm good. But I think that's the thing. You need to be tall enough and prepared enough for what you're walking into.
Metaphorically tall, we should point out.
Metaphorically tall.
Metaphorically tall. Wow.
I get that, but I think it makes you a certain type of user on those platforms that isn't really possible, like, from a human nature perspective. Like, to go in and, like, ignore and not be affected by a whole lot of things. I find myself, like, when I'm approached by that stuff that irritates me, I start getting hostile, right? I don't like who I become because I can go that route. I can feed that just as much as anybody else can and be a total
dickhead,
unpleasant person.
Oh, okay.
Right?
I was trying to help.
But that only, like, it begets more of the same behaviors. So, yeah, I think it's... We all have an individual threshold, so maybe that is what you're getting at. But I think it's forcing us to be to behave in certain ways when we all inherently have different ways of behaving. And some of us have bad days. Some of us are bad days every day.
Yes, that's true. I've been feeling that way lately myself. Okay, just want to direct people to we were talking about the whole Doge story and how it played out on the various social media platforms. It's a big story on the front of 2600.com, and there will be a link to the Doge staff list that we it was taken down on Twitter, so we put it up on our own site. And they can't take that down, can they? Doge-staff4.jpg is the file name.
And that is the point of this. We're just trying to share public email addresses so you know who is infiltrating different organizations, who is the staff that they've contracted into doing this to all these different agencies and all of the reporting on it. This is to build upon that so that reporters, so that the public, so that accountability as it's being touted as being full of, well, let's practice that.
Exactly.
So people that are investigating, that are writing articles, that are just concerned or curious, or maybe they are a representative in certain districts that house some of these agencies or some of the places that are impacted around the world, They have questions. They need clarification on those things. These are the people that you're going to want to contact. These are the people that we're going to want to hear from if there are hearings, if there is an inquiry of some kind as to how these agencies were upended, turned inside out, or just completely flattened. We're going to want to know, and it's our right as taxpayers, as people that participate in this particular government that is being dismantled so gleefully, it's our right to understand who is at the controls, who's doing this stuff, and so that we can seek recourse, so we can get answers and find out exactly what is going on in our name.
Now, remember, elected officials, you can get all that information for them, their email address, their phone number, their physical address, their names, obviously. What Doge apparently is freaking out about is the fact that we're printing their name and their email address. That's all. I'm kind of embarrassed by that. We should have more.
I kind of want to be, diminishing this, but it's still important and a big deal.
It's an agency. They're doing a lot of stuff that affects a lot of us and many, many federal workers.
It's the least we could do is share this list.
They're shutting down federal leases for health care for indigenous people all over the country. And we need to know who the people are that are doing this. And maybe you think they're doing good. You still should know who they are. You have the right to. They don't have the right to just silence all that information and keep it secret. Not in this society. Yes, Gila, you gasped.
I did, because I was thinking about a project we did in some social studies class I had in high school. And I remember this was early in computer labs, and our teacher said to us, okay, do you think you could balance the federal budget? What would you need to do to balance the federal budget? And I remember I was working with a friend of mine, and we said, we have a plan. We could save a ton of money for the federal budget. If we cut all defense spending.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But we were high school students during a fully theoretical exercise in our computer lab, and no one's life was going to be affected by the decisions we made.
Mm-hmm.
The Doge babies, which, first of all, the whole idea that it was if they actually find corruption, then that's good. I mean, they're just not finding it. They're not – anybody who thinks that this is at all oh, my God, what is the word I'm looking for? That this is not a disingenuous project. If you think that Doge is really there to root out corruption, I have a bridge I would like to sell you.
Everyone says that. I never get the bridge. 802-321-4225 is our telephone number if you'd like to join the conversation. We're going to take a limited amount of calls in about a half hour to come. 802-321-HACK is our telephone number. We're talking about Doge lists and social media platforms and the decline and fall of Western civilization, et cetera, et cetera.
We've got 72 people with us right now, which is crazy.
We can handle a lot more than that.
I know, but it's very exciting. I would like to – that's a touch screen. Thank you, dear. I would like to share something that a listener says called the Batman has said in a couple of different he's talking about Doge AI. Doge AI is a black box. It can be presenting, adding, and removing things in the data. It can be playing you all. Focus on the AI. You go after it, for Ilan is lying to you and using the AI. So because – I think the contention here is that because Doge is working from AI that is completely closed source, there's no way to prove the veracity of what they're saying. And Batman, if I have misinterpreted what you're saying, do let me know. Also, just wanted to quickly, apparently a lot of people in the chat are not huge fans of the gondolas, sky rides, air ferries, whatever you call them. Basic tech, I believe you that the one at the Henry Dorley Zoo is scary. I was actually talking about the one at Peony Park, if you go that far back. Yes. Again, super lively chat this evening. Thank you all for being with us.
Before we go to our first call, I just want to point out a couple of Hope-related things. The deadline for early submissions for speakers is this coming Monday, the 17th, St. Patrick's Day, in fact, so don't get distracted. If you want to be on the schedule, if you have a talk and your talk is accepted, and then we get 10 better talks later on, your talk is still going to be on the schedule if you submit by March 17th, by next Monday. So that enables us to start scheduling without completely finishing the schedule. And the conference isn't until August, so we have plenty of time. But those people that just want to make their commitments now and send those proposals in, there's all kinds of guidelines up on hope.net as to how best to do that. But this Monday is the deadline for early submissions. Not the deadline completely, but early submissions gives you a bit of an advantage. Also, please, if you're considering going to the conference, buy your ticket now. It helps us out tremendously. And we do need to pick up the pace a little bit so that we can do more. We can invest more into the space. The conference is August 15th to 17th. The Hackers on Planet Earth, number 16, I believe. Wow, can't believe we've already done 15 of these things. And it's happening at St. John's University in Queens, which has been awesome the last couple of times, and we hope to make it even better. So if you're not going to be around, but you want to support the conference and everything else we do, be a virtual attendee. It's a way that you can participate, be at the conference without actually physically being there. You can interact with speakers, with other attendees. It's a lot of fun. It's really a community that's built up quite a bit. So hope.net is the place to go for all of that, and we hope to see a lot of people showing up and being a part of things.
Yes, hope_16 is our title, but you can reach us hope.net. That is the landing site with tons of information about submissions and tickets and lodging, all of those important details. And I'm really excited. I kind of am interested in what people are talking about. Like, what is the most kind of curious thing that is out? Because a lot is going on. A lot of people have areas of interest in technology. I'm very curious, like, what direction, what thing or what area of interest, what subject matter is really taking off that people are talking about? We talked a lot about artificial intelligence this year or large language models. Mm-hmm. There are many other things. How are people using these things? I guess they're sort of normal now in many ways and evolving. They're sort of extending people's abilities as far as having incredibly knowledgeable bots right at your fingertips instead of actually sifting through search results. We're actually interacting with things that are of relative intelligence and also corrupt, wrong intelligence, down to entire agencies being processed by these kinds of tools. So I just am fascinated. I'm always fascinated by what talks do get approved and are really popular during our events. So I just really can't wait to sit back and look at the schedule and figure out which one I want to see,
I can't say anything publicly, but we have gotten some really good submissions so far. And I expect to get a lot more good submissions as well. But, wow, I'm impressed. I'm very impressed. Hope.net, all the information, how to submit a talk and how to buy tickets and all that kind of thing. We have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. For just slightly getting off topic from what I really want to say.
Sure.
For once, I am in complete unison with Alex concerning social media. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding or whatever kind of shit we are not on the air anymore we're getting in terms of government. The damage that social media has perpetrated to humanity is so much more enormous than the minimal benefit that we get for the human race. That aside, then you know, the ones who don't see it this way can have their say after I'm finished. But the thing that I really want to say concerning Doge, it's a lot more perverse than what you said, because not only are they doing what they're doing, but they are essentially, this is a massive redistribution of wealth, because what they are doing, and it's becoming very slowly a little more evident every day that goes by, they want to defund the great government that started with FDR and, you know, pretty much went undisturbed until Reagan took over. And then suddenly we had to cut all the little bits and crumbs that were going to the poor. And don't be fooled about this. It's not that they care about the poor. It's just to keep the social peace so that the wealthy can have even more wealth. But now it's completely shameless. Now they want to go after programs that are not just for the poor, but the middle class. And meanwhile, they're going to give themselves a massive tax cut. So basically what's going on is we are going to pay for the government. They already, the plutocrats, the so-called billionaires, are already paying no taxes or very minimal tax. And we, the people, are going to pay for their perverse lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
The other twofold of this is that the right wing is winning. They finally are enforcing shamelessly and without any hypocrisy their Hitlerian ideology. And this is just the beginning. As I said, you might recall in November, and I'm sorry, you know, it's not that I want to say, oh, I was right. I wish I weren't right. But to me, it was evident right there and then. And they're winning so well. Just look at what's going on. Trump was trying to get U.S. out of NATO. Now he has the Europeans suing it because he's saying, oh, I'm a friend of Russia now, and the Europeans are running for cover. It was unthinkable that NATO, an American creation, would see America getting out. And now it's happening. It's automatic.
Well, you know, I think a lot of this... Okay, go ahead. Say,
it's happening right now in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
They have what they call the stopgap bill. It already passed the House. And today, on NPR, to which I listen for 5 minutes of news every few hours, say that some Democratic senators are in doubt whether they should support this bill. This is outrageous. I don't do this often, but I wrote an irate message, and I left a phone message to Chuck Schumer saying, if there is one Democratic vote for this shame, screed, that is camouflaging as a bill, I am campaigning actively against you and for your opponent, because at least we will know what we're getting. Spineless opposition is not an option, and it shouldn't be. And that's about all I want to say. I'll listen to your response.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for your call. I think you might have gotten through to Chuck because I know he's saying that the Democrats are not going to support this budget and the government might be shut down. And, you know, to say that Republicans are winning, you know, they're getting a lot of what they wanted, but it's the dog that catches the bus, you know. Now they have it. What are they going to do with it, and what's going to be the effect? Right now, you know, not seeing very good effects. I'm seeing very expensive eggs. I'm seeing a lot of people with measles. I'm seeing the world really taking a second look at this country in disbelief. We have all kinds of conflicts going on with Canada, Greenland, Europe. okay, you know, it might feel good now if that's the kind of thing that, you know, you fantasized about. A couple of months, I think you might be very tired of it. And, you know, what I hear is we're all going to feel the effects heavily within a year of what's going on right now with tariffs and all that nonsense. So, yeah, interesting times ahead. So let's just remember to stay together in opposition and not judge each other too much. You know, let's try and unite on the things we agree with so that we can build something better. And then we argue. We argue once we have something better, and then we can debate how to make it, how to implement it, what to do, what not to do. But if you spend all your time in opposition arguing with the other people who are in opposition, you will never get to the point where you actually succeed. I shouldn't have to tell people that, but it's true.
Yeah, anyone who's been involved in activism for any length of time quickly, I think, learns that the biggest enemy to any of it getting anything done is the infighting. When people are all agreeing on something, they can maybe see their way to doing it without beating each other up in the process.
802-321-4225 is our telephone number. Go ahead, Kyle.
I was just going to say the caller had some good points. I think there's a lot of truth to that. Like the whole thing of like a relative good, like, oh, I get a couple of followers, or I'm able to sell my merch, or get a bunch of traffic to my website. Like that relative good of these platforms versus the ways it's upended governments and been used with misinformation and stuff. There were plenty of examples of how it had allowed far right or extremists to take hold in various places in the run up to the last election, and it was always a concern in the last several elections. The whole mess of it, it's been one of the main themes, is how do we have and leverage social media for good discourse in the types of political campaigning that we need to do without having, like, false images or videos or stuff that's doctored or stuff that's blatantly false or meant, designed to get reactions, or it's misconstruing some detail or outright falsehoods, like mischaracterizing a person, slander, and libel with zero checks or no content review, or content review itself being weaponized for stuff that's totally legitimate to bog down any kind of campaigning that somebody might want to do. Like, that, I think, is very real when the caller was talking about the disruption, the real upending of how we have kind of an open election process in a fragmented and wholly broken, bought, paid for media environment. Like, campaign finance and all of that alone, and that the steep numbers that the networks make in running campaign ads and stuff, that was on the horizon years ago. Like, we know, I think it was at Citizens United, and some of the PAC and other things that were deteriorating, shall I say, the honesty of that process, and getting back to that with how affordable it then became to target ads and target with social media as an additional tool, it has had ruinous effects, more so than just somebody being able to sell their, like, handmade sweaters on Etsy or something just because they're getting traffic from an algorithm. Like, that's great on the individual scale, but the entirety of those platforms being leveraged with big advertising dollars and targeting and stuff like that, and then plus bots and all the other stuff, yeah, it's been quite detrimental. And that's where I could say, like, I would wholesale go off on how bad all of this has been, like, this entire era, like, two decades, I don't know, longer, since Reagan. So anyway, that's my piece on that.
Okay.
We do have another call.
Oh, we have another call. Okay, let's take that first. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Yes, hi, Emmanuel.
It's Rebel. Rebel, let's make it quick this week. We have a limited amount of time.
I want to say about social media. I don't have platforms like Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and all that. It's just, one thing is enough. It's just too much to handle, too much to keep track of, all these.
There's a limited amount of space in your head.
I
get it.
Yeah. let's see. There's lots of ways you can make calls now on WhatsApp,
If only Kyle had had you to guide him while he was trying to make a phone call to a friend.
That was my point. Well, there's too many ways.
But you could also dial the operator and have the operator make an operator assisted call.
Yeah, the operator can't make a WhatsApp call, can she? Try asking her that.
No.
Well, it's not just that there are so many. It's also me weighing, okay, what exactly, how does this type of call work? How does that type of call work? Like, because I'm aware, like, I understand a little bit of the underlying technology, so I know the kind of rudimentary trade-offs for each of them. And that's another thing I think was the subtext of what I was saying, is that it's kind of loaded. Like, okay, yeah, like a regular cell phone call, do I have reception? has the entire phone system been hacked? Like, there are a lot of different things. Like, maybe that would encourage me to use something more like commercial, like your WhatsApp or like a Skype or Signal thing. But, okay, wait, what kind of encryption do they use? Or, oh, wait, is that going to generate ad revenue for some, you know, advertising function because they're going to be filtering through whatever I text or say, kind of like what Google did to Gmail.
This is why,
like,
you call people at 3 in the morning, because it takes you that long to figure out what's the right one to call with.
Okay, you don't know that. But all those calculations...
A lot of annoyed people out there.
When you know a little bit, and I don't know anything, like I do a little, and it itself can be a little paralyzing, and I think the absurdity is really what I was getting at. But I hear you. There are a lot of methods.
Let's see, what else? What was I going to say? Let's see. Back in, like, 2007, 2008, did we ever think that we would be able to see the person that we're calling?
Okay, I can take you back to the World's Fair in the 1960s where they demonstrated picture phones, and they promised that to us, and ever since I was a child, I've been waiting for the picture phone. So, yeah, you better believe I expected the picture phones to show up, and I'm just waiting for the flying cars.
I would say I was very aware of the technology emerging. I think in 2008 even, it was one of the functions of iMessage or iChat or whatever the early phones with cameras had. I think I was probably, this is me personally, probably very resistant to using video on any kind of call, and in fact strictly used voice for a really, really long time. I think what changed for me was the pandemic. I think that was a lot of different people using more video for all kinds of stuff. But basically, when you've been boxed in and unable to physically talk to anybody, I had to kind of let go of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the case for a lot of people, that distance learning or keeping in touch with family when you haven't seen them for years, not by choice, that had a really, like, the trade-off for the mental health, like the wear and tear on you, it made it less, I just felt less restrained in embracing some of that, because it had also been widely kind of established for like a decade. So me jumping on, it's not like this some video calls are like some new technology that's, I mean, sure, maybe it's inherently broken as is, but that I would be on there is like a drop in a sea of people that are already using video calls. So I was late to it personally, but it was by choice, and mostly the benefit of having connection with people whom I couldn't physically see actually made my experience with telecommunication. It enhanced it more than I thought it would. And I'm not saying I would have chosen it earlier, but I think that's, again, that thing of what platforms and how you do certain things on the internet or with telecommunications, they're personal choices, and you have to weigh them for yourself.
Rebel, final points, Rebel.
Yes. Remember in the menu, See You, See Me, where it was very choppy and we had like...
I do,
like,
remember See You, See Me.
I remember that.
Spelled with the letter C.
Right. And then that was video. I mean, that was like, okay, this is not working. This is not going to work, you know. But then...
It was so bad, yes.
Came.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then the 3G or the 4G came out, and that's what, you know...
Yeah, the LTE networks being able to, like, sustain HD video. You had high-efficiency codecs like H.265 and...
DSL,
yeah.
Don't forget that, you know, that...
The wildly faster speeds just enabled... video that itself wasn't a distraction, and your call itself was more the focus than how bad the call was going.
All right, Rebel, always a joy to hear your voice, and thank you for calling, and we'll talk to you again soon. Phone number 802-321-4225 for those of you who wish to call in our last few minutes, or about 11 minutes left, I would say. You know, we didn't talk about this at all, but Twitter got hacked. It had nothing to do with us, at least not that we know of. But, yeah, on Monday, Twitter was taken down by, well, they don't really know who took it down, but tens of thousands of users reported at least three major outages of Twitter throughout the day on Monday. The pro-Palestinian hacker group Darkstorm Team claimed responsibility for a DDoS attack on the platform. That's according to a public Telegram post. Now, they're known primarily for targeting countries and entities that support Israel's attack on Gaza. But Elon Musk accused Ukraine, because that's his thing. He suggested a large coordinated group and or a country is involved in the massive hack in a series of posts on Twitter.
He said
the hackers had IP addresses originating in the Ukraine area. A cyber operations expert said it doesn't make a lot of sense that a state actor would be behind the attack. Nicholas Reese, an adjunct instructor at the Center for Global Affairs in New York University's School of Professional Studies, said that a state actor doesn't make a lot of sense given the outage's short duration. There are two kinds of cyber attacks. There are ones that are designed to be very loud, and there are ones that are designed to be very quiet. And the ones that are usually the most valuable are the ones that are very quiet. Something like this was designed to be discovered. So to me, that almost certainly eliminates state actors, and the value that they would have gained from it is pretty low. He acknowledged that a group may have been trying to make a statement with the attack, but said that such a short outage is not much of a statement to me.
Yeah, I'm with all that. Okay. I think that's pretty fair. Unless whatever they were doing was a pretext for an action that did go unnoticed, and they didn't need that much time. But yeah, like putting the virtual thumb on their face for like a week while something else was going on would have been both a statement and pretext for another kind of action going on quietly. But who's to say? Without the ability to investigate, without openness about it, a lot of these things you just don't hear what ultimately happened. I've been asking about what happened to the American telephone system for a while now. Nobody seems to want to talk.
Now, Elon said that IP addresses originated in the Ukraine area. What does that mean, the Ukraine area? Is it in Ukraine or is it not in Ukraine? Ukraine area, that could include Russia, you know, the next door. It could be Belarus. It could be a number of different countries. Ukraine area, you know, be specific. Let us know what. And plus, he may not know this, but you can mask IPs. In other words, you can make it seem like you're coming from a particular place, and you're not. You're somewhere else.
Yeah, I would suggest that if you are masking your IP, definitely
right.
Come from a war zone.
I'm not explaining it right. Yeah, it's technical. That's why Elon probably wouldn't get it.
You gotta like simplify a little.
Yeah, but just because it's he sees something in Ukraine, it might be something else.
Yeah, it's over here, but then it's not over there. It's over here.
Do we have any phone calls coming in?
I think it's still ringing.
Oh.
we're trying to get new callers, people that have not called before.
Yes, Rebel, don't call back.
That was one thing that we forgot to mention.
Yes.
That we were interested in people who have not
and
called the
again,
show.
Again, we only have one line, so there's always people that wind up not getting to us, even though they hear the phone ring, because we only see the one. And, you know, I wish we could just make it so that we only have one line. Everybody else got a busy signal. You would not believe how hard it is to get a busy signal these days. It's pretty crazy.
The way we're doing it, yeah. I mean, it works for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't want to redesign the phone network. Just needed to, connect some calls. But maybe we can add our own. We'll install the busy signal.
All right, we'll give another minute or so to have a call come in.
Sure.
802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. What else? Looks like, Rob, you've got something. You're on the verge.
I'm trying to remember the last time I heard a busy signal, an actual busy signal, on a phone call, and I'm finding I can't. And it's now making me think of how I've had people ask me what that noise is that happens before the music on Off the Hook.
Kyle, weren't you trying to call me the other day and you got a busy signal? I think it was on Signal. And I was on the phone. And if you're on the phone on Signal, you might get a busy signal that way.
Yeah, it did not divert me to a voicemail, which on a regular voice call on a cell network, like cellular network, two cell phones or calling to a cell phone, you would ordinarily get passed on to the to the voicemail or whatever kind of
greeting. I'm glad you didn't, because I have no clue how I would get a voicemail out of Signal.
But I noticed right away, it went right to Busy Signal, which is accurate. I mean,
yeah.
it's
I'm
fine.
Busy.
You know,
I was
like,
busy.
You were on the phone.
I was busy.
I get a busy
Absolutely,
signal.
Yes.
I know now's not the time.
No,
I go away.
Go away. That's what a busy signal is saying. Go away. I miss those days. I really did. All right, so I guess we're not getting any more phone calls. All right, that's fine. You know, it's okay. We only have a couple minutes anyway, so whoever calls now has to be brief. We'll give you one more minute, 802-321-4225.
All right, I think we can take... Go ahead, Gila.
Oh, sorry, I was going to say, remember when a reorder tone stopped telemarketer bots, and I'm going to need somebody to explain that to me.
That is, the reorder tone is what happens at the beginning of Off the Hook, and it is also the tone that that used to happen when you called a number that was not a working phone number. And there was a trick, and I used to do this on my own voicemail, and people did it even back in the answering machine days, where you would put a sample of a few seconds of reorder tone at the beginning of your voicemail message so that when telemarketer bots called you, their computer would hear the reorder tone and think, oh, this isn't a working number. Let me remove it from my list of people to spam.
A reorder tone sounds like a busy signal, except it's faster.
Right.
Some might call it a fast busy. You know, what other people did, they would put the doo-doo-doo sign. You ever remember that sound? You put that on your answering machine. And that tells everybody that they've reached a non-working number, including some automated systems.
Yes, I used to experiment with that on the beginning of my voicemail as well. I think you remember.
Yeah, it caught a few. It caught not telemarketers.
Yeah, it caught a few members of like our family who were confused by it when trying to leave me an actual message.
Oh, you want to confuse people? Okay, you basically leave a message, an answering message. Hello. Hello? Sorry, I can't hear you. What's that? Speak up. Can you shout? I can't hear you. And you go about 30 seconds. And you say, oh, by the way, this is an answering machine. Beep. And sure, you make enemies, but it's funny. It's so funny. All right, we have a phone call? I think we have a phone call.
We can try this, yeah.
All right, let's go. Good evening. You're on Off the Govatron. Go ahead. Is anyone there? There's nobody there, Kyle. All right. Well, we tried it. We tried. One more minute. Go ahead. You guys have something else?
I'll wait longer.
I was just saying I miss novelty answering machine messages. My dad used to use one on his answering machine. It was a cassette. I think he got at Radio Shack. And his answering machine greeting was a couple of vocal impressionists doing a George Burns and Gracie Allen routine. And for that reason, George Burns and Gracie Allen still remind me of my dad.
Okay, I think we have another phone call. Let's try this one. Good evening. You're on Off the Govatron.
Hey, Emmanuel, it's Delchai.
See, that's how you pronounce it. That's how you say it. Delchai, so good to hear from you. How have you been?
I've been doing good. A little busy, a little crazy, but you know, it's always good, clean fun.
Wow. So,
I was when you brought up the comment about the reorder tone.
Mm-hmm.
And how you used to be able to defeat people with that.
Yeah, I think it still can work.
It can. I've been fighting the telemarketing spam a lot lately. I put together my own asterisk box at home and got a DID in the middle of nowhere. And I've been trying different techniques. There's actually some pre-built scripts now that will, if they determine that it's a telemarketer call, it just plays random snippets of audio like, hello, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Can you say that again? And it, like, keeps repeating them over and over again and keeps them on the line for hours.
That's really cool. For people that don't know, Asterisk is a software program to run your own PBX. There's other packages of software out there. I think FreeSwitch is another one. But basically, you can run this on any kind of Linux or other machine. I believe it's multi-platform. And it allows you to do a lot of the call setup and functionality, like you said, with a DID. I think that's a direct inbound dialing.
There's companies that will sell them to you for like $20 a month.
And you got one in like way off in a less populated area?
Well, you laugh. It's actually in Kremlin, Oklahoma.
The place is called Kremlin?
Kremlin, yep.
I heard of Moscow. I didn't hear of Kremlin. Wow.
If you dial my number, it plays the Russian national anthem and says, Thank you for calling the Kremlin, now relocated to Kremlin, Oklahoma.
Classy.
That's the kind of stuff we like. That's some humorous.
Now, if you like that, you'll like my latest little toy project that I'm building and going to put out. And, in fact, Emmanuel, because you keep asking, it's going to be my next article submission.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, that's
okay.
We just polished off the spring issue, so it's good to know there'll be at least one more article for the next one.
It's called the Judicious Automatic Contact Keep in Touch, or Jacket.
Wow.
Here's the thing. If you are protesting, or if you're minding your own business, or you happen to be carrying a green card, and you get caught and thrown in jail, you get one phone call, right?
Well, you're supposed to.
One phone call.
You're supposed to. I'm not sure you'll get it. Just like you're supposed
exactly.
to talk to your lawyer.
Now, let's say you get your one phone call, and you call your one number, and you get, sorry, we're not in right now. Please leave a message. Or nobody picks up,
mm-hmm.
or you don't get through, you don't get another call.
No, you don't. That's true.
My system is a script that plugs into Asterisk or Free PBS, whatever flavor of Asterisk you're using. With the DID, you call this number and you put in the IVR code of your choice, right? And it will record a message. And then as soon as you hang up, it has a list of phone numbers that it calls and plays back your message.
Okay, that's
like an emergency contact list gets a voice note from you that you recorded on an IVR. That's brilliant. That's
and
good.
The first thing it does is it grabs the caller ID of where you called from, and it puts that ahead of your message. So it says, this is an emergency call from Federal Penitentiary, or... 800-555-1212. Beep, and then you hear the emergency. Hi, Dad, I'm in jail. I like you here.
Yeah.
That's actually I built that into the script.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, so you can put as many numbers as you want in there, and it will call each one and play back that recording.
That's a very useful tool that I think would be very, very popular. Because, you know, in that situation, you know, you don't have very many options. And like you said, if you call a number that doesn't pick up or you call the wrong number, you know, I suspect if you take the average person, I don't know, under the age of 30 maybe, and you say, make a phone call to your parents or to your, you know, friend or something, you don't know their number because you're just so used to hitting mom on your phone or something like that. You don't actually know the number. How many people know a phone number? When you're in jail, they don't hand you your cell phone. They put you, you know, they give you a desk phone or a pay phone or something like that. It might even be rotary. Who knows?
If you're lucky.
Yeah.
If you're not lucky, they give you a prison phone. And you can end up paying up to $25 for a call.
Mm-hmm.
On top of the by-minute charges.
That's the thing.
One of the biggest profit centers in prisons right now.
Exactly.
Oh.
On cop shows, on TV, you know, this has always been a problem with me, where basically they ask, okay, this is the person we're looking at. You're a suspect. Tell us where this person lives. And immediately, they always write down the address. I couldn't write down somebody's address just based on memory. I probably wouldn't know their phone number either. I'd be lucky if I knew their name. But on TV, they always get it 100% of the time.
Well, that's TV. I mean...
That's true.
On TV, they have a Stargate that takes you to another planet where Elon Musk doesn't live.
But we aspire to live by those rules.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look at Star Trek, okay, from the 60s. They had the little flip-top communicator. Now we have cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
They have the little automatic health scanner, the tricorder. We now have the Raspberry Pi. I mean, you can make it to the tricorder. I mean, yeah, we're getting there. We'll get there eventually.
I think we will.
We've got to go through a lot to get there.
And that's a great reason to have tools like the ones you're designing for people that are going to be active, that mm-hmm. are going to take risks, that are going to stick their neck out a little bit to stand up to some of this. Be prepared. And these are the types of tools absolutely will help.
We have to run, Deltry, but any final words?
Yeah, one thing I'd like to plug, HDA. I don't know if you've heard of it.
What's that?
Actors with Disabilities.
Oh, yeah.
It's a new DEF CON that I run.
Uh-huh.
and it's designed to make DEF CON awesomely accessible. If you are want to attend or you are attending and you have a disability of any kind, or if you're afraid to attend because you have a disability, contact HDA and we will work with you to make sure that you can get there and have a hell of a time.
What's the site?
It's on the main DEF CON site, defcon.org. Just type in HDA.
Okay. And do you know the dates of DEF CON this year?
They have. I don't think they've been fully announced yet, but I think they're on the website.
For this year, they've announced it for this year. I'm pretty sure they already have. But
I'm sure they have.
It's on the website. I know it's before.
Yeah, 47 days. I can tell because I've got one of those LED scrolling signs that I got out of the subway in New York. Uh-huh. And I've programmed it to show a DEF CON countdown.
Okay. Well, I guess we can calculate that. But it's before HOPE this year. It was after HOPE last year, but this year HOPE is in mid-August.
It is August 7th through 10th, 2025.
August 7th through 10th. Okay, and we're August next weekend, August 15th through 17th. So, cool.
I've been doing HDA for about 8 years now.
Uh-huh.
And we've been key in making things accessible for people in wheelchairs or with medical issues, guide dogs, things like that.
That is so important and so life-changing for all the people who need that. So thank you for your efforts. And let's do everything possible to make sure that's a success and support programs like this.
I unveiled Rolling Thunder, the first war-driving wheelchair.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
It's a power wheelchair that it shows movies, it has a Wi-Fi hotspot, it distributes files, and it does war driving.
You know, you have to make a YouTube video if you haven't already. You just have to.
I have. It's on Instagram, but I'll get it to you.
Get it on YouTube. It'll be a big hit, I think.
And I got something especially for you, so check your email. I wrote a song for you.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I like songs.
It's all about human rights.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's one of my things. Yes, I like that a lot.
Yep. There's one particular song that's dedicated to you on the whole album. It's called Artificial Schoolhouse. It's a modern interpretation using AI of Schoolhouse Rock.
Okay. Well, I look forward to hearing that.
And it's in your email.
All right. I'll try. Great hearing from you.
Always.
Be well.
See you next time.
Take care. That's a good way to end, I think, this edition of Overtime. I want to thank everybody who called in. Thank everybody for listening. Our email address, oth@2600.com. As mentioned, next week we'll be doing a phone-in show on the radio station from 7 to 8. No overtime next week. If you called this week, we ask that you don't call the radio show next week, as we have a lot of people who only listen to the radio show, and that's their opportunity to call in. And, of course, we'll be back in 2 weeks with both shows. Any other final words from you guys out there in Signal Land?
That this has been a very good discussion, both on the air and on overtime. And, I really dig what we have going on here. This is a great community over here and a lot of good dialogue happening.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's good to differ. It's good to have arguments. What's not good is putting people down, intimidating people, ganging up on people. That's the kind of thing, even if we agree with you 100%, we are not going to back that up ever. So, I think those are good words to live by for everybody, and I think we'll get to a better place.
I think it's also a basic fact of not only the internet but human society that there's always going to be a jackass who says something mean, and I think it behooves us all to continue working around that.
All right, good words to end on. Kyle, Gila, Rob, good night, everyone.